We're live with our 326th episode of Absolute AppSec. I'm Ken Johnson at CK Tricky on social media, joined by my co-host Seth Law at Seth Law on social media. Seth, say hi.
Hey everyone, welcome back to another episode. Ken and I were digging into pre-show specifics and talking points and realized that we probably should just go live and talk about the same thing. Before we get into that, though, I want to give a shout out to our sponsor for this week's episode, GuardSquare. Think about your mobile app source code. Once it hits the App Store, it's out in the wild. And without the right protection, decompiling is easy for malicious actors looking to steal your IP and tamper with your software. That's where GuardSquare comes in. GuardSquare provides the highest level of mobile app security for Android and iOS applications and SDKs. Their advanced tools integrate seamlessly into your CI/CD pipeline. We're talking polymorphic, multi-layered code hardening techniques and automated runtime application self-protection, paired with mobile application security testing and real-time threat monitoring to deliver the highest level of mobile app security without compromise. Don't leave your hard work exposed. Secure your mobile applications today. Go to guardsquare.com to learn more. And you may have noticed that is a new sponsor for us. So thanks to GuardSquare. Those guys, if you've ever heard of ProGuard, I've been promoting ProGuard for a number of years, the open source Android security library that actually does a lot of the obfuscation and other things that I've recommended it for years. So when they reached out to be a sponsor, I was actually pretty stoked about it. So thanks to GuardSquare. Before we get
Thanks,
into other
Christopher.
things, before I get into other things, there is training opportunities still available. The classes for both Black Hat and DEF CON are filling up. Just to be frank, we do need a couple more signups for DEF CON to happen. I don't know if Ken and I's, liver or, sanity can take Vegas for that long, but we're going to do our best to make sure that we deliver great content as always. Both of those are AI focused. Obviously, that's had a huge impact on AppSec over the last couple of years. So excited to get into that. So check out training.absoluteappsec.com. And I am going to put up the link for GuardSquare here really quick. Ken, what do you want to start with today? Actually, a question for you really quick before we get into the articles and the actual the content, the discussion that we wanted to start today with. The training courses, right? I know I end up talking about them a fair bit at the beginning of each episode. In your mind, what is the differentiation between what we offer at Black Hat and what we offer at DEF CON? And I know I'm putting you on the spot, so yeah.
Yeah, you are actually, because this actually was not discussed. The biggest one is just DEF CON's pretty focused on just the sort of like how to build, how to use agents, how to build agents, how to build not just agents, but how to build using all the tooling, how to build tooling for agents, how to do a lot of things, basically. It's a lot of how to build something that's going to have some purpose in security, meaning like how to build some agentic tool that's going to have some purpose. So if it's threat modeling or if it's code review or if it's DAST or whatever, you're going to walk away with knowing how to glue those bits together and be model agnostic. So that's probably the number one. The Black Hat one is much more involved in going deeper, both in LLMs, but also with how to blend that into like specifically we do a lot of code review on that one. A lot of code review in that one as well. So I think it's basically just a deeper, more comprehensive course, but also with a bit more okay, here's how you leverage AI for code review as well. So there's I don't know, there's just it's just deeper. That's how I'd say it.
It is.
Is
It
that
is.
accurate?
I mean, from my perspective, I was just wondering how you were thinking about it as we, promoted over the last, month before we teach both of those courses. The content does differ. We've got very specific things that we're trying to address during Black Hat, And that is a longer course. One of the things that you will get out of the four-day course is more hands-on. The traditional complaint that we get is we try to cover way too much in a short amount of time, right? Trying to get people from basically no knowledge, like in the DEF CON course in 2 days, no knowledge of agents or how to code like LLMs or how to interact with them outside of a chat window to, hey, now I've got like scripts and techniques and SDKs and actual code that I can use to harness those LLMs, right? And then on the flip side, so at Black Hat, you're going to get more time with that, as well as the, you know, secure code review methodology, other tips and tricks that we have, and the opportunity to ask more questions and to dig in further, because you will get that hands on the keyboard. So, good. All right. So before the podcast, Ken and I were talking a little bit about the wider influence and consequences that AI is having on the AppSec industry. Right? So one of the things that popped up is whether or not the number of job seekers that we currently see is a result of AI or just wider economics, and just the wider economy in general. I don't have a good answer for this. So yeah, go ahead.
Can I just mention how this got started? Was I was asking Seth this morning because I've always had people reach out and say, hey, you know, if you know of anybody that, I actually had a competitor reach out. I didn't even tell you about this one. Like this was at a competitor reach out like a few weeks ago, and they're like, hey, I know we're your competitors or whatever, but I have a friend who's looking for, you know, a job, and you know, do you know of anybody, and or not a job, but contract work. And this is how this all came up. Cause I was telling Seth, like I used to get hit up by people like Seth and some other friends who own consultancies who are like, hey, you know, I need help. And it doesn't always happen during Q4. Sometimes it happens during Q3, not usually during Q1, but Q2 through Q4, typically I get that from people that own consultancies. And what's been the trend the last two, I would call them seasons or years, I guess, would be I actually get way more people reaching out to me about, hey, are there consulting gigs, or do you know anybody who needs some contract work or whatever. And I was just asking Seth, like, is that like a sign of the times or something? Yeah. And that's how we kind of got into it. We were talking about, you know, and then my follow-up was like, well, surely AI, like, yes, okay, I know it's had a big impact on the world and whatnot, but like, you know, that doesn't change your need to have your quarterly or your annual or whatever, semi-annual, whatever it is, assessments. It doesn't necessarily mean you don't. And then actually what I said to Seth was, so the opposite, I said, actually, like, I would think, you know, especially if you're using AI inside of your product, or if you're like having to, I don't know, secure marketing people or sales or whoever that's using different tools backed by it, I would think like, actually, that'd be a need, more of a need for a services company to come in and help with all that. And so anyways, that's how the conversation sort of got started. And that's Seth was like, we just need to bring this online and chat about it.
Yeah.
So that's how this all came up.
Yeah. I kind of go back and forth. AI is definitely one of the components that go into that. I also think in general, there's more practitioners that are out there. There's more companies that are taking AppSec seriously. And so I know locally, like our OWASP group has grown over the last 5-6 years. And with that, some companies that traditionally, you know, 5 or 6 years ago probably would have been more apt to go the contractor route for AppSec services now have internal people that they're using. Or, you know, the larger companies have formed internal, you know, tiger teams or AppSec groups that provide that same level of service. So they're not going outside where they traditionally did. And, you know, when you and I started in consulting, like there was no, you know, no one could spell AppSec at most large corporations.
It was an afterthought. It wasn't even an afterthought. It wasn't a thought at all.
Yeah. Yeah. you know, and so I think like part of this is just the maturing of the sector in general, right? So we saw the same thing in network security, or, you know, take your pick, right? Like, you know, DevOps, you know, initially there was a lot of outsiders coming in and, you know, people, you know, snapping up or, you know, jumping into the industry to perform that as a third party. But nowadays, most people can get a job doing that with a large organization. And that also feeds directly to, hey, if you're running a consulting firm, there's only so many outside or third-party penetration tests or whatever you want to call it that are actually getting done. And so there's more competition. I don't know how much of that is AI, but the AI pressure is definitely there as well, the justification. What I'm seeing is that people have kind of gotten over that AI dip where they think AI can do everything. And now they're realizing that they are generating more code and they do need more security checks because of how much AI influence is happening internal to the organization. But it's also sped up our process. I feel like it's evening out, basically. I feel like it's starting
to even out. But are you saying that, like, you feel that there are just more roles filled in general and more teams built to do some of this, the stuff that they didn't traditionally, or had companies had traditionally problems hiring for? Is that what you're kind of saying? It sounds like.
Yeah, I am, right? Like, there's more people that are coming out of school with the expertise, or at least like the initial expertise. We've reduced the need for the number of juniors with AI. But there's also there's been more layoffs, so there's more people in the market that have these expertise that can fill those roles. So it's more competitive. It's a maturing of the sector. That's kind of what it feels like to me. But with the increase of AI generated code that's out there, I do feel like it's starting to normalize that. Hey, you now need to speed up your process if you're a consultant, for sure. But there is still work that's out there, and there's still vulnerabilities to be discovered and to be remediated. And internal teams are overwhelmed. So, yeah, figure out how to do it, I guess. I don't know. I think in general I'm optimistic, but it's still a different landscape than it was a year ago.
I definitely still see plenty of like hiring for roles out there. If you just look at our jobs channel, you can see that. But let alone if you look on like LinkedIn and whatnot, people advocating or promoting certain roles. So I would say anecdotally, I have no data other than my own eyeballs and vibes on this, but anecdotally, it does seem like the last couple months have maybe picked up a bit on the hiring side as well. So I know there's like a lot of factors. This is such a weird time because we've got the, you know, macroeconomic factors, we've got US specific economic factors, we've got AI's, you know, changed some things. It's also kind of weird too, because like I've seen on Reddit a lot, which maybe Reddit is not the healthiest place to hang out, I'm learning, but it's definitely not. but I do see people kind of questioning their majors and questioning, you know, their career paths and stuff on Reddit. And I'm like, well, that is interesting, just because like imagine if, you know, say, I don't know, there's a 30 or 40% reduction, something pretty significant in those coming into the industry. It's like, well, then we're going to end up with a job shortage all over again, potentially.
Yep.
Cause you know, like I know AGI and all that, and I've heard all the things, but you know, until it's in your face and you see it, it's kind of not there yet. So you kind of can't build around something that's not there yet.
True.
Yeah, so, Yeah, I don't know what to say. I feel like there's still going to be a need for those rules. I just hope that there isn't such like a feeling where people are like, oh no, you know. And I know it probably sounds, sometimes I feel like people probably think I waffle on this, or like, you know, go back and forth between, oh, we're going to need people and we're going to need, we're not, no, I always think we're going to need people. I just, yeah, let's just say that. I always think we're going to need people, period. I just think people will have to level up their skills like you would at any point with technology, because that's like, when have you ever been able to just roll from role to role, or sorry, go from job to job or role to role and not have to update your skills, or not have to, like, it's like, that's not a thing. If you're in technology, you're always updating your skill set anyways. So that's only the only been the only thing I've been saying, which is like, just don't get left out in the cold where you don't know how to manage these systems properly and evaluate them and, you know, all that fun stuff.
Yeah.
And build them and all that. So,
yeah.
Tomorrow. Yeah.
Yeah. It's definitely an interesting time. And there still is a lot of uncertainty as to what security in general, not even just AppSec, but security in general looks like in 6 months or 2 to 3 months. That's one of the things I'm really interested to see at Black Hat and DEF CON this year, is where people feel like the industry is headed, because there's a lot of uncertainty. I'm not sure many people will address it, but there's a lot of good research that's going on, in part because of AI tooling. So I expect there to be a lot of spicy, you know, vulnerabilities and other things that are going to get dropped during the DEF CON period.
Yeah, sure.
So, yeah. But, yeah, like, as to what that means for juniors or people getting into the field, I don't have a good answer for it. And I think I've said this on the podcast a couple of times, is I just don't know, right? Like, it's...
Nobody does. All you can really do is prepare and not... Like, all you can do is try and prepare as best as you can, but you can't really... None of us know where this is all headed. No one can predict. I mean, it could... Like, I'm not saying this is the case, but I am saying, hypothetically, for a long time, we had machine learning, right? That was considered AI, or like the closest we could... Because actually, I remember specifically before OpenAI released their first LLM to the public, the craze at that time was trying to, like, it was like AI is kind of the, was like, if you were to look at, I remember seeing a diagram when I was going through a workshop on this, a machine learning workshop, right? Like, this is, I mean, was it 2026 now? I mean, this probably was like 2021 or something like that, 2020. In any case, 2021. So I was at a workshop, I'm watching this thing. The diagram was like, here's AI on the outside layer, and then there's all the inside layers, and ML was at the center of it. Now we've got LLMs, and AI is a part of that, right? But there was a period of time, a long period of time between when ML was released and then the next iteration of ML, which is like LLMs, right? Next upgrade to AI. All I'm trying to say is, we don't know when the next thing that's like going to replace LLMs is going to come out someday, right? And I'm sure that there will be. There has to be, right? Like, we've learned something from how LLMs work. We learned about the spooky math and the behavior behind it. Why wouldn't there be like another iteration? But how long is it going to be before that thing happens? So predicting all these different what if scenarios is just maddening. It's best to just learn what we can learn, get good at. Organizations that will pay us to secure them.
Yep, exactly. Right. Like, if you had asked us 6 months ago or even a year ago, right, like, we probably would have talked a little bit more about, you know, crafting of prompts and a few other things from an AI perspective, that would be where I'd be focusing juniors. Nowadays, it's right, definitely like use of agents and use of, you know, Claude code or Codex, or, you know, take your pick as far as what, you know, which.
Going through the evaluation, seeing what's failing, going through the observability to find out why it failed, and then going through and tuning whatever it is that needs to be tuned for, like, that alone is like, for a junior, that would be like where I would start learning those fundamentals.
Yeah, exactly. And that's not specific to AppSec, right? Like, it's, know, just utilizing those agents and, you know, figuring out how to best interact with them. And I still think there is so much, we're just in the early days there. There's so much value in that. The amount of value that I'm getting out of it, right, from, you know, my testing alone, looking at code, looking at running applications, is massive. And I can't speak to that enough, is that will be the future of third-party consulting, is utilizing those tools and knowing how to utilize them. If anything, my dependence on some of the traditional tools has decreased, right? We're still utilizing them, but realistically, I don't need that same level of tooling that I did last, 12 months ago, 2 years ago, because I can ask specific questions and get specific answers without me manually digging through or looking at results or replaying requests or whatever it actually is. So, anyway, with that though, which one do you want to start with? Do you want to start with that paper that we've been chatting about in the random channel, the security degradation? It's from actually last year, and that's Brian brought that up. It's on archive.org or archive.org, whatever you want to call it, 25, 6, so that's like September of last year. Let me drop it in here. The premise here.
Okay. I didn't see this one. I didn't even see the conversation around this. I'm sorry, guys. I've been pretty, actually, you know what? You're the only one that knows this, besides those at work, but I lost my internet. OTN went out. So I live in the woods. So like, I didn't have any signal. So I've been like, for me yesterday, Seth, that was probably the most peaceful day that I've had in a long time. That was actually wonderful. Being disconnected and unplugged forcefully was insane. But unfortunately, I didn't read this. So let me try and keep up with you while you summarize it for the people.
That's okay. I mean, the overall response here, right? Like the abstract is pretty good at it, right? At summarizing what they found, right? So they reviewed mitigation of security vulnerabilities using iterative LLM feedback. And what they found was a degradation of the results after, I think it was the fourth or fifth iteration. So there was some improvement to start when you started a session, but the more that you utilize that same session, and especially as your context window regenerates or is compressed from session to session or over time, the security results got worse. Now they did release this late last year, so I'm wondering if the new models, the latest Opus 4.8 or Fable, right? Like if Fable you can even get it to work, but any of these new models, GPT 5.5 would actually do better at this. There's been some discussion in the random channel as to whether or not this is, how effective these things are, right? And I'm pulling it up now, right?
I can speak to some of that. First, I can say that the model itself is not where the issue is going to lie. So the model improvements are, although I'm sure that they help, but that's not going to be, what you said with, you had mentioned compressed context, and context management that's actually the hardest, and Pete talks about this, and I love listening to him talk about it, to people who, you get on calls and people have questions, they want to ask technical questions. And so we talk about this, which is like for long horizon tasks, keeping the relevant context, well, keeping it on task for one, but keeping relevant context for the whatever thing that it's doing in that moment. And there might be like 100 things that it's going to do. Presenting the correct context gets challenging over the longer a task is running. But also, LLMs are there. They're like an eager eager assistant there to help you with whatever you want. So why I'm saying that is if I say, hey, go review this and tell me what I could improve, it's going to do that every single time. Like, it's going to try and find something to improve every single time. It's got a constraint, it's got a goal, and it's going to try to reach that goal within those constraints. So my point being is that even model improvements, I don't feel like are going to help here. You have to get to a point where you start to measure where it's becoming what we would consider a nitpick or noise, or maybe even flat out wrong. Anyways, I'll pause there because I have like examples of this, but I don't want to get overly wordy. Do you disagree? I mean, have you tried doing any, because we've tried doing self-healing analyzers actually before. So I'm curious if you've ever actually like even tried this and seen any of these kinds of results. I'll wait for your response. There's something that caught my eye. They mentioned CoQL in here.
Yeah. We've been playing with some of this like self-healing or self-improving, like flywheel stuff. And context always comes into it. I'm trying to think, right? Like the best results that we seem to have are those initial iterations for sure. You know, and when it is very specific to improvements related to very, very defined vulnerabilities, I guess is what I want to say there. The larger that I try to make it, or the more context that I try to include, the worse the results are. It will always, to your point, it will always come back with something. And it's almost a lesson in learning when enough is enough and when you can step back, right? So you guys talking about nitpicks versus actual like core level changes and findings that affect the security of a code base, that's a great thing to take into account. But it does, it really comes down to that size of that context. Context drift, when you start to compress and, you know, have to, you know, especially those long running sessions, every time that I start to hit those upper limits, I feel like I'm starting a new session nowadays, just because it does tend to drift off and I'm not seeing as good a results over time. And I end up getting stuck in small nitpick loops, I guess is what I would call them, where it doesn't solve something, or it tries to, and then it fails, or I'm having to get involved and actually look deeper into the code. It becomes a distraction as opposed to an effective tool. And I don't know if that's what you're talking to there. I know you're reading through a bunch of stuff. So what is it that you were?
Oh, I'm listening too. No, I'm listening as well. No. So their sample, theirs isn't, you know, theirs is interesting. I have way too many thoughts on this. So I spent the last week benchmarking. I spent all of last week benchmarking. Okay. My tool against other tools. We did well, but that's not the point. The point is like, there are some mistakes that I made. I had to literally scrap it. And I was reading through their methodology to make sure they didn't make the same. Right. So, now this is not I can speak to their methodology, but this is not a comment on their methodology. I'll just explain what is easy to screw up when you do these benchmarks. Right. So yeah, theirs is all about basically giving it real world code bases with 10 real samples of code free from defects and asking it to improve from a security perspective, right? That's what they're doing. So a little bit different from my use cases, which are to find the issues first, then resolve them. So now what I was looking for is manual review on their part, because what you can't do, and this is the weird crazy thing, is like the mistakes I made with benchmarking. So for one, the tool created both purposeful and like any purposeful vulnerability, what me I said so sorry, let me back up. The way I benchmark was I used AI to create, like it was given a strategy of how to create from simple to complex vulnerabilities and the categories within, you know, within those categories of vulnerabilities within those different efforts, right? Or levels of complexity, I should say. So that's the first thing. But the problem is like you instruct it to make a corpus, a key that's like, here are the vulnerabilities I intended to do. Here's the issue. It kept introducing accidentally other more nitpicky vulnerabilities, things that like aren't really, we had this whole conversation last week about vulnerabilities versus whatever exploits, or I forget what we were talking about, but it was something about that, right? So when I say vulnerabilities, I just mean some sort of like flaw, right? Just some sort of flaw. And it doesn't, it may not even, it's a lot oftentimes things you shouldn't even report on, frankly. Otherwise, you're going to get told you're noisy and people are going to ask me how I know. People will like complain and want to turn you off. So it was introducing both intentional vulnerabilities and unintentional vulnerabilities, which was insane. But in any case, second to that, and this is the biggest one that I don't think people understand, it would then go and try to score itself how well everything went, like did. Okay. Well, when I was going through the results manually, I'm like, wait, like that's not vulnerable. That's not even reachable code. It's not even like functionally, that code doesn't even work. I mean, I get why you'd think it's maybe like path traversal or whatever, but so what I found was Claude, latest models, all that fun stuff, all the stuff that people tell you is so great, was incorrectly flagging what it, so it was incorrectly giving credit to tools that were basically flagging false positives because it itself didn't take into account whether or not that code was reachable. So that was another flaw. And there were like a few other things that were going on inside those benchmarks where I was like, I would have to caveat and have to give this, that, and the other. My point being, to all of that rambling I just said, was like, if you're doing benchmarks, like I think I need to, I want to put out a key on how to actually benchmark properly. But one of the things you should not be doing is having AI both, I would say this, I don't think I would allow it to automatically build the P, like if it's you're doing a PR or you're doing a full scan or whatever you're doing. Like you can do it, can do that where you have it build the code, but you better review every line of code, right, to make sure it is what you want. But definitely when it comes to the actual like benchmarking, do not use AI to review those results because you as a human will need to go through manually. And that's why I was, and now you have it pulled up on the screen. That's why I've seen CodeQL. So at least it's something deterministic that could flag where they should go look. They use manual security code review, which was the most important part. Because again, I think if you're benchmarking, you as a human being have to review those results because AI will confidently tell you it's either not vulnerable or it is vulnerable. And I don't give a crap if it is Fable. I don't care if it's whatever. I don't care what model you're using. They do it all the time. They flag things incorrectly. It is just what it is. So you as a human, if you're going to benchmark, I'm just going to say it one more time, manually review those results. Otherwise, you're not really doing a great job.
Well, and this one of the things that you said in that kind of struck a chord with me. This idea that there is still a need for manual review, right? So making sure the code that's being generated is what you expect it to be, making sure the results, across the board. I'm seeing a pullback from the manual review process, and I understand the inclination because you are generating so much code using the AI tools that it's really difficult to take the time, just the manual time and the manual effort to review those things, especially when you've been tuned and trained at this point to utilize and trust an AI agent to do that for you, right? We're losing some of that clarity that we used to have as to what the code base actually looks like, what the architecture is, because we're trusting and handing that off to something else, what the evaluation framework and that process actually looks like. If you're not at least pulling back the covers as to what is being generated, you're always going to be behind the eight ball when it comes to understanding the application, number one, but also number two, having trust in the results that are being generated, right? And And I don't know if you're having, if you're starting to have that, you know,
yeah,
if you
definitely. Are,
as you're, I'm as you're like, trust. Yeah, it's as I see results that come out after asking the AI and like our harnesses to identify vulnerabilities, it's becoming more and more critical that we have a human in that loop to validate that trust, because there have been instances where they definitely overinflate the vulnerability severity on these issues, number one. But number two, it will make stuff up. Like it's making connections between different flaws, different code bases, code snippets that may or may not actually result in a vulnerability, you know, speaking of reachability or exploitability from a code perspective. But even on the dynamic side, right, it's very difficult to trust that that the results that it's spitting out are indeed the results that you asked for.
Yeah, yeah. I definitely would say if you're a human being who needs to this should be a, actually, we shouldn't have to say this because, like, you know, it's so weird. Like, not to go off on a brief aside here, but I am going to. It does crack me up because, like, all right, in I think September, October, it was like 4 years since James had approached me to build this company, which means for at least 3 years we've been selling an AI-backed product, an AI-native product. I find it so funny because in the beginning, I couldn't get anybody to trust a system that did code review or anything security related with AI. They were like, it was laughable. I was like, determinism was the only way humans have to do it. And now now it's the complete opposite. Now I get people where I have to be like, no, look, okay, no, I know you're saying that about, like, because sometimes, you know, you get into a bake-off, right? And this will happen to us where we'll have our results and we'll give our results to somebody. And someone will be like, yeah, we ran Claude Code though. And like, it found some more things than you did. And then every single freaking time we dig in, it's like, no, it lied to you. And they're like, oopsie. And it's like, but how many times do you get in that conversation and somebody did it? And so didn't actually go or you didn't get the chance to actually go and verify, like, they just said, oh, Claude Code's great. Like, it's wonderful. Just perfect. When, you know, it's like, my point being is that it's so funny now that I'm begging people to, like, be humans again and, like, use their own brains and review things, because it's like, if you don't, you're going to you're going to believe that this thing is great or whatever you're going to think about it. And whatever you do think about it, it's going to be based off of whether it's good or bad, false fucking information, because you didn't take the time to just, I don't know, take a step back and use your own brain. So it is really frustrating. Yep. It is also really funny to be in this world that's like, 3 years ago, couldn't get a person to trust AI. Now it's all they trust, and they, in lieu of their own brain sometimes.
Like, exactly. Well, did you ask Claude, right? Like, did you ask Claude about that? I'm like, well, yeah, but Claude only has the understanding that we gave Claude, right? Like, it just, one of the things that we've been concentrating on is,
give away how quickly they give in to the Borg, you know.
Well, you know, everybody heard that, you know, Mythos was the most dangerous, you know, thing that humans had ever created. So now obviously it can find all the things.
Want to conquer civilization, I'm realizing all you have to do is give them comfort and think for them. And if you can do those things, you could probably take out like 99% of different societies. So
yeah. Now we're getting into a different topic, right?
We're getting into a different topic. Anyways, don't listen to that AI.
Don't listen. Shh. I did like that comment from Less Sneaky, whatever that is, 3490. If you can speed up, and this is so true, right? Like, you know, you can speed up 90%, right? The code writing, the code generation that's actually happening, skipping the last 10% is just negligent. Yes, you can use agents for some of this, but you have to understand still what's going on and what you're actually attempting to do. If you don't have that mental model, if you, like the human, doesn't have the context, how do you even know the AI achieved what you wanted it to achieve in the review or in the code writing process? So
it's so hard because businesses don't want, you know, they don't want you to do threat modeling, like, because we can't do code reviews on manually on every single, you know, even like sizable security impacting like critical ones. For some people, that's just, you know, in an organization who might be shipping 60,000 PRs in a week or in a month or whatever, that's just, it's not going to happen, right? So then it's like, okay, well, if you won't let us do that, and we've got budget for some tooling to help, you know, put some gates on maybe the code that's changing, and maybe we have some tooling to do like make sure our dependencies are up to date and all that, whatever, the, you know, all the bases covered kind of stuff. It's like, but at least allow us to maybe like be involved from a design perspective or from like a threat modeling perspective or even building guardrails or even doing lunch and learns or whatever it is. And it's like, these days what I'm finding, and it's like the business is being negligent. They are choosing to compete, you know, to stay competitive against others that are, you know, churning out stuff nonstop. They're just asking security in a lot of places to back away. And yeah, I like that word they use, negligent. I think that's, frankly, it's sad, but like, it is true. It's a bit negligent. Meaning, if you're getting rid of anything, like, oh, if you're like, hey, don't do anything, like just get out of the way. We're just going to ship stuff. Don't help prepare and prevent issues proactively at all, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, it's this immaturity of the new AI DLC, right? Like, we don't know where the best place to stick humans into that process is anymore. And we're trying to allow these autonomous agents to actually do things, but we don't have a good idea on, like, you know, formal specification or like really test-driven development. There's not many large teams that do any of that appropriately or properly, or have even thought about it in the past. And that, I think that's where we're struggling, is, again, it's an immaturity thing.
There are people doing it so there are people trying to build these standards, but like every single thing that's ever happened, it's opportunistic. So you look at the names behind it and you can directly draw a line to why they're involved. And so it's like, is this for the benefit of the community, or is this going to, you know, benefit somebody's pot?
Yeah.
It is what it is.
Well, I don't know. Like, the problem that we have, again, is the explosion of the number of people that think they're developers, right? Or are moving into the development space. And I don't want to discount that, because it is, sorry, I'm moving off into kind of another topic here. Well, but
not just developers, I'd say knowledge experts. I just want to add to that. Mm-hmm. I don't think it's just developers or even just AppSec or anything. I think it's actually just knowledge work has been to a small degree commoditized, which makes people feel like experts.
Yeah, they do, right? Like, and, you know, I mean, just an example from this last week, you know, going in to meet with the accountant, and, you know, he's, you know, our age, right? Like, I've been working with him for years. Great, really great to work with. But then he mentions that he's got some new, you know, guy fresh out of college that's just started in the last couple of years that is now building things with Claude. And they're thinking about selling the software and the process they've come up with to other accounting firms, right? Like, and I'm like, but the guy's an accountant, right? Like, he doesn't have a development degree. He's just using Claude to build something, right? Like, which is, I mean, it's so empowering. But then on the flip side, I'm like, oh man, this
is your money. It's your money, and everybody's money being hand. No biggie. Thanks for telling me this guy doesn't have any experience whatsoever, and like, it's so great that he's building stuff that handles my data. Appreciate it.
Security guy. Just building this dashboard.
On my bill, on my inputs, and stuff. Perfect. Well, you know, it's funny, because like yesterday I go to, you know, like I told you, you know, or told everybody, my internet was out. So I go to Home Depot to run an errand, and I'm looking for this really, I still don't know the type of light bulb that it is, but it's for like outdoor lighting, really bespoke, hard to find one, whatever. Right. So I'm at the thing, the guy comes up, the worker, he starts asking me, and he's like, oh, it's not this, it's not that. And I was like, So I whip out ChatGPT, bro, immediately he had the same exact reaction I feel like any of us listening to, or on this podcast or listening to the podcast have, like when people tell us, well, ChatGPT told me this, that, or the other about security. It's like, immediately saw he got deflated. His face was like, so then I was like, I played along with him, you know, like, hey, sure, maybe it's this, maybe it's that, or, you know. And then eventually he just goes, yeah, I guess ask ChatGPT. I was like, damn it. I was with you there for a second, man. Don't give up. Don't give up. Us humans still have a purpose.
Yeah. But, you know, yeah. That's a good point by Bobby, right? Like, AI makes it easy to be self-assured into believing your bias isn't bias, right? You know? It's always like, oh, that's a good point, right? Like, yeah, you're absolutely right. I did screw that up. Let me go rethink that. And it's working with the most agreeable coworker ever, right? So, yeah. Okay. So I did want to bring up the other.
Oh, dude, I had comments collapse. I didn't see any of these comments. I'm sorry. Oh, that's okay. Now, yeah, yeah. Oh, interesting. Worries. Okay, cool. I didn't miss too much.
Okay, yeah, cool. Yeah, let's see. What was I going to go into? Okay, so let's pivot a little bit. I wanted to bring, like, I know you did actually read this one, right? Like this other article that I sent over. It's not necessarily an article, but Open Web Docs now has a list of web security documents, right? That classify attacks, defenses, threat modeling, authentication, right? Like separate articles around this. This is a good introduction. My question to you, is Open Web Docs becoming the next OWASP?
What? Well, maybe because they're, hold on, let me give you the link at the bottom. If you look at, there's Dan Applequist was thanked for chairing the security web application guidelines community group. So there is actually within the web standards. Now this is something, and I'm going to put the link here right here. This is something I love. Like, honestly, great. If they did collapse OWASP into it, I don't know. Like, maybe it's not so bad, but no, I love it, man. I love the people that are building the standards being the ones, you know, being the most involved in where, you know, the cheat sheets, the protections, the standards themselves, right? How to use them the best. Yeah, I think that's awesome. It's great. There's a lot of participants, 70 participants so far. Well, that's decent.
Yeah, that's it. That's decent, right? Like in, OWASP, we've talked about that for a long time, right? Like, OWASP and where is OWASP going? And we know a lot of people that are on different working groups for OWASP and different projects involved across the board. Obviously we've had, Brian Glass and Tanya and others on the podcast in the past. And I don't know, do we need that competition between different standards organizations? Like, what do you feel like is necessary? Like, what does that bring to the table that OWASP doesn't, I guess, is my question, outside of a different viewpoint or a different purpose? I haven't dug into it that much. It was just kind of my initial take on it when I was seeing that those new attacks and things. Those feel a lot like, OWASP cheat sheets, right? But just from a
degree
perspective. Yeah.
But there are certain things that are vulnerabilities just inherent to, the classic IDOR, right? Look at that. That's not necessarily a web standard thing that can be changed. It's sort of, you made a decision to look up a record or change a record in an insecure way, right? That's not a web standard, but for CSER, for instance, that was a web standard with a web standard protection that had to be sort of like put into place. Same goes for like SSL TLS, right? Like, these are standards that if created correctly or incorrectly, dramatically impact all of security or all of web security. And it's not the choice necessarily of the developer. It's the choice of the people building the thing that the developer is going to be piggybacking off of, right? So there's first party versus like standard party, I guess you would call it, issues. For the things that are standards based and can be fixed via standards, I think that that's where, yeah, like some, there's a Venn diagram of overlap for sure. But I don't think that, but why I'm saying this, I don't think you're going to see W3 getting into like the IDOR business, or even like look at the agentic top 10, right? There's lots of new categories of types of vulnerabilities that LLMs have gifted us with that I don't think W3 would have anything to do. You know, I don't think they're going to care about data model poisoning, for instance. You know, that's just not. So, I mean, that's my take. I don't know if you feel differently or if you feel like that Venn diagram creates a weird friction, and if that, you know,
I do feel like it creates friction. I don't think that is a bad thing, right? To the improvement of the overall community, right? We have different players that are involved. Obviously, MDM, Mozilla.org is coming at it from a pure web perspective. OWASP has widened its charter, right? It's now just like application security in general, which allows for more things like mobile applications and AI security and other topics, other security avenues, more developer focused as opposed to just web focused. But MDN coming out and open web docs and actually giving their list of these are the things that developers need to be concerned about actually probably holds a little bit more weight in the web application space, because they are creating browsers. They are directly involved with that front end interface that most users use, right? With, you know, for lack of a better term. So
yeah, if there was a subsuming of the top 10 list for their list, then I mean, that top 10 list for OWASP is also very contentious too. We've talked about it so many times on the podcast, like how, and Brian Glass has talked about how the, you know, their intention for its use versus how it practically gets used, it's not the same at all.
Yeah.
I don't even know if it really conflicts. I don't even know if the audience would be the same, because, you know, we talk about OWASP being there for developers, but I mean, I feel like if you ask a developer, have you ever heard of OWASP, you might hear a yes, you might.
Not guaranteed. I ask that question pretty much every time that I'm going into an organization, we're doing like security training, and I'm consistently surprised with the lack of recognition of what OWASP is. Some organizations it's larger, but I'd say, I'm just anecdotally, you know, thinking through the last couple of years of teaching, when I say, oh, okay, here are the OWASP top 10, who's heard of OWASP before? And I only get maybe 20%. Recognition, that's pretty poor, right? When it comes to OWASP as a developer organization. Most of the people that are raising their hands in those situations are the ones that have had to deal with the auditors, to be frank, right? Not even trying to solve simple, you know, security problems, but it's usually because, hey, they're the seniors on the team that have had to justify something or other that to make sure that the, you know, the latest app assessment or the latest pen test covered the OWASP top 10. And that's where they're getting most of their recognition, which I think is the reason that the OWASP top 10 is so ingrained in the developer community and in OWASP in general, is because it has been used in that way as far as the checklist of these are the things that need to be looked at.
So, and I'm thinking about, yeah, also the developers who, you know, those senior developers you mentioned, they probably also, you know, they've been through like pen tests and audits and yeah. And they're like, that's probably, well, and then you always have that like little tiny percentage of developers that are just interested in security for whatever reason. They're probably just interested in anything that's new anyways. They're just curious people. I love those people. Yeah. Those are always my people in the developer org. Not because they like security, just because they like everything. They're just interested in everything. It's always such great people. Mm-hmm. But yeah, most senior devs, they probably know of it if, just because like they've been audited. But I think on the whole, yeah, it's not a very common thing for me to find like developers who really understand. And again, even if they do, it's like, oh yeah, the one with like SQL injection and XSS, like, yeah, it's upgraded since then. But yeah, that's part of it. I was trying to think about Bobby said in chat too, because he's like, oh, if we treated security like we did front and back end mobile dev team roles. And I was thinking about, I was like, well, why don't we? And then it kind of peeled back. Well, you know, I always feel like tech people are, you know, we accept that it's like one to 700 kind of ratio of security to devs, but we accept that because I was just thinking back, like, how did it sort of begin? Well, it began with like the tiny handful of weirdos who hacked on web apps and were like, I can do this, that, and the other to them, right? And then those people took jobs inside of organizations. And then, of course, that, there's a good reason why there's going to be like one of those people to like 700 of the other people. But that in reality is not probably where we should have gone with it. We probably should have gone with, like, no, you're a security software engineer and every team's going to have one. And their whole job is to make sure designs are secure, to make sure guardrails are there, make sure like inherently insecure functions are overridden, quality gates on reviews, triaging, you know, reports of flaws, any number of things that, you know, could be done. And, you know, just I'm thinking like, well, why is that not in the case? And anyways, so that's where I left.
Yeah. Well, to continue on that thread, I feel like that was the evolution of what became product security, right? Like, was the development teams that were responsible for building security into the product, as opposed to the AppSec teams that were coming from the security side of the house that were more interested in tooling and offense/defense, not necessarily like the code and the features that were built into the applications themselves. So like teams that, or companies, organizations that have product security teams are treating security in that way. That would be my argument there, but it's just not consistent across the industry.
But it's also a product security team, right? It's not I am a software engineer with a security expertise that I came out of college with, and, or I, you know, whatever, like, that's my title or role, and every team has one or two, right? That's not quite the same as saying I have a dedicated 10 person, 12 person, hell, 30 person team of ProdSec that has different people doing specific security roles versus, no, I'm a software engineer first, but my primary goal is, you know, like, for instance, are all software engineers the same? No. I mean, to Bobby's whole point, there's mobile software engineers, there's front-end software engineers, there's back-end, there's QA engineers. Like, why wouldn't there be also a security? Like, I'm a software engineer, but I have a security-specific Ben, and we've always got one on all of our engineering teams. You know, mm-hmm. We didn't go that route as an industry. We went with we're kind of special, and you can't find many of us, and, you know, you can deal
Come
with,
on,
deal
we
with
want
it.
To be special. Yeah,
pay us a lot of money. You can't find a lot of us, so kind of thing.
But was that, I mean, what were you arguing at the beginning of the podcast, that there's a lot of availability right now?
I know. That's why I'm saying it's the weirdest time. It is the weirdest time right now, because like I can't make heads or tails on a day-to-day basis of it. Sometimes it feels like nothing's changed, like to a degree, meaning like, sorry, not that nothing's changed, but that like for most people, their day to day is just a little bit different, but it's still what it is. And yep. Then other times it's like, oh, everything's changed. And so, yeah, I don't know. I don't know day to day. It's a lot of back and forth.
It is a lot of back and forth. Well, with that, we are starting to push close to an hour. There was a couple of announcements, I guess, right? Like, Ken and I are going to be doing a cross podcast promotion. I don't know what you want to call it. Collaboration. There we go. Collaboration with
quarterly collaboration.
Quarterly correct collaboration with. I can never remember if it's chaos
coffee and
ProdSec. Yes, chaos coffee and ProdSec. Cameron and Kurt over there next week.
Coffee Chaos and Prodsec. I did it this time. Coffee Chaos and Prodsec. Jeez, yes, there I'm you idiot.
Go. Coffee always first. Coffee is first. Yes.
You can't have chaos without the coffee.
Coffee, exactly. And Prodsec just happens to fall into that, right? Like,
you can't have Prodsec without coffee. So,
yeah. See, it all fits. There we go. But we have that collaboration next week. They will be on the podcast with us. If you have specific topics you would like us to cover, there is a thread going on in Slack right now to address that. If you're not in Slack, reach out to us, info@absoluteabsec.com. We will get you an invite. And yeah, I think that's everything for today. Thanks again to Guard Square for sponsoring. And
thank you, Guard Square.
Any final thoughts?
See y'all in a month. It's going to be a doozy. Yeah. It's going to be a doozy.
Watch this space. We are going to be doing at least a meetup or something else as well. But
yes, I will hint, Seth, I didn't tell you this. We do have somebody who wants to sponsor a happy hour event at DEFCON/Black Hat, probably DEFCON. Okay.
Yeah.
So I'll be working. I'll hit you up. We'll work through that and see what we can get. Yeah.
Sweet.
Communicate it out.
All right. Sounds good. Well, thanks for the interactions today. Thanks for listening, and we will catch you all online.
Thanks.